There is no intermission this evening, and Janice Ian will be out shortly, but please give a warm ARC welcome to, here on Janice's request, Gretchen Peters.
Hi, how are you guys? My name is Gretchen Peters. This is Barry Walsh, and we're, like Janice, from Nashville, Tennessee, where 30 degrees is really cold.
There's a man out here puts his head in the mouth of a crocodile. Puts the whole thing in, takes it out, and gives the crowd a great big smile. And they walk away with their illusions of safety safely intact. And they tell their little wide-eyed kids it's only a man. There's a man out here who throws knives at a target with a blindfold on. And the wheel spins round and the knives roll down till they find their home. And I can feel the rush and the whoosh of every blade of steel. Cause I am the woman on the wheel. Sometimes I get lonely, sometimes I get scared, but most times bored. Sometimes I ask God, please God, just show me what's behind that door. As if God was Monty Hall and this was Let's Make a Deal. I am the woman. Thank you.
really glad to be out with Janice for these last three dates of our very long year. We just got back from a month in Europe, and the funniest thing happened. We got so much funnier by the end of the tour. We were hilarious. But anyway, we love playing with Janice. One of the reasons I personally love playing with Janice is she's the only person in the entire world that's ever referred to me as a tall blonde. So I stick with her as much as I possibly can. I don't want to bring you down right away, but I'm going to. I'm going to do something from my divorce album, which always makes people laugh. I don't get it, but it must be nervous laughter for those of you that haven't been divorced, and it's laughter of recognition for those of you who have. Oh, I'm in the wrong key, aren't I? Yeah. Well, I was feeling really sort of up.
Now that's funny.
I gotta bring it down, down.
This is how it is, no dramatic scenes. You read your morning paper, I read my magazine. Happy weatherman says we need the rain, but I don't know what he's thinking. It's been coming down for days. And this brew is just too bitter, too strong for me to drink. Gonna pour it down the drain right now, right down the kitchen sink. Cold coffee in my cup, you turn the TV up, breakfast at all. This is how it is, and it's no easy trick. We can promise what we want to, but we can't make it stick. Half a life ago, with this ring we wear, now we're sitting at this table with the things we never said. But to come right out and say would be rude and out of place. So I'll keep it to myself, I guess, but it's written all across your face. Burnt toast and offerings, that's what the morning brings. Breakfast at all.
try to do this next song in tune. That would be a good thing. The weather has played a little bit of havoc with everything. Skin, guitars, you name it. I wrote this next song a really long time ago. It was on my first album, which was kind of a flop over here in the States, but opened up a world of a new world for me over in the UK, and really basically because of those audiences over there. It's now the title song of my best of. I can hardly believe I'm saying that. Mind you, a best of is different from a greatest hits in substantial and meaningful ways. Nevertheless, it's a best of. But I wrote this song back in the early 90s, I guess it was, after I took my daughter, who was still then at the age of, she was pre-sarcasm. You know, like 6 years old. Now that's at five, maybe. But I thought I better get her to the circus because she's gonna get to that age where she won't believe anymore, and she had never been. And I looked, as we were sitting there, she and I were sitting there, and the lights hadn't gone down yet, and I looked at how, you know, this sort of seamy underbelly of the circus and the, you know, how kind of not pristine things looked, you know, with the lights still on. And I thought, how like the music business this is. Got the seed for this song planted in my brain, and then of course the lights went down, and I was just transfixed for a couple hours. I don't know how she felt about it. I never even asked her. I just went home and wrote this song immediately. Thank you. You just never know when you get that close to the edge of the stage what's going to happen. Or when I sit down at a piano. That's also kind of slightly scary, too. But I cannot pass up this opportunity, it being very, very close to Christmas now, to try and sell my Christmas album, because I only have 2 more weeks to go, and then nobody's going to want to buy it. So. Last year, I guess it was 2008, Barry and I decided that we wanted to try and make a Christmas album that you could, something that was slightly more pensive, something that was slightly more melancholy than Jingle Bells. You know, something you could go home and sit in front of the fire and stare at the tree with a glass of wine and just, you know, chill out and no ho ho ho, none of that. So we did this record at our house in Nashville, and this song that I wrote for it is the title song. It's called Northern Lights. Deep in December, the year has grown old. The days have grown dark and the nights have turned cold. And the hurts that we harbor, the debts that we owe, are sleeping down under a blanket of snow. Covers the grasses, the bench and the park, the scars in the earth where a man's made his mark. And high in the sky there's an unearthly glow, like a miracle sent to delight us below. And all our cares seem immaterial. Oh, darling. a song about, I guess it's been probably 15 years ago, that I really, honest to God, never thought would see the light of day, but it's had at least, you know, 3 or 4 of its 9 lives so far. It was a hit. Initially, it was a hit for a country singer named Martina McBride. It was an American Idol song, which was really weird because I had quit watching TV at that point, and I really didn't get the whole American Idol thing. Like, it was really big, you know. It was like, a friend of mine called me and said, "No, you don't get it. Like, there are people in Zimbabwe watching this, you know." But the weirdest incarnation of the song by a long shot was last year during the presidential election, when after the vice presidential debate, there were parties, you know, after the debate, and the Republican Party, they brought Sarah Palin out on stage to my song. Like it was her theme song or something. Now, mind you, this is a song about domestic abuse. It's almost like she didn't listen to the words. That was just really the last freaking straw for me because as Barry pointed out to me, you know, there are going to be people out there that really think this song is about rah, rah, rah America, go Sarah Palin, you know, and that just was not what I intended, you know, when I sat down to write it. So, in order to protest it, because I really had no legal recourse, I decided that during the campaign season I would donate the royalties from the song to Planned Parenthood in Sarah Palin's name. Yeah. And they raised, not through me alone, but through people, you know, loving this whole idea, they raised over $1 million during the election cycle, a couple of months, yeah. But the best part of the whole thing to me, aside from feeling such poetic justice over the whole thing, was that they delivered a thank you note for every single donation. So, like, you know, 32,000 thank you notes. I just love that visual. So, this is at Janice's request. This is Independence Day.
Well, she seemed all right by dawn's early light, though she looked a little worried and weak. She tried to pretend he wasn't drinking again, but Daddy left the proof on her cheek. I was only 8 years old that summer, and I always seemed to be in the way. So I took myself down to the fair in town on Independence Day. Well, word gets around in a small, small town, they said he was a dangerous man. Mama was proud and she stood her ground, but she knew she was on the losing end. Some folks whispered, some just talked, but everybody looked the other way. And when time ran out, there was no one to call on Independence Day. Let freedom ring, let the white dove sing, let the county home. Now I ain't saying it's right, but maybe it's the only way. Yeah, you talk about your revolution, it's Independence Day. Let freedom ring, let the white doves sing, let the
is going to come out and play a little guitar on this song.
It's true. bus to St. Cloud, Minnesota. I thought I saw you there, with the snow falling down around you like a silent
prayer. Janice Ian.
Gretchen Peters, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you guys so much.
Barry Walsh. Thought I'd start off with something lighthearted. There was a lady named Vanny Mae. She fell in love at the zoo one day. The crocodile with the big white smile stole her very heart away. The courtship was brief, but quite intense. Once he got under the barbed wire fence, on the honeymoon night, she turned on the light and said, "Darling, meaning no offense. Good God Almighty, those teeth are huge. No hanky-panky will there be for you." So they went to the dentist who pulled all but two. It's amazing what love can do. It's amazing what love can do. True story. Well, they had a son and named him Rocky, of course. He fell for a gun on the police force. She was impressed with his bulletproof vest, so they let their romance run its course. They rented a room at the Hotel Ritz, sat on the edge of the bed and kissed. She took off her shoes, she took off her blues. It was then they almost called it quits. She said, "Good God Almighty, your nails are huge. No hanky-panky or it's jail for you." So he pulled them all out just as fast as he could chew. It's amazing what love can do. It's amazing what love can do. Feel free to sing along. I swear every word of my tale is true. You better be careful, it could happen to you. Nobody knows where true love grows till they stand in someone else's shoes. Good God Almighty, it's a funny old world. Boys will be boys, girls will be girls. The whole darn thing is just one big zoo. It's amazing what love can do. It's amazing what love can do. It's amazing what love can do. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming out tonight. Good Lord, it's been a strange year. Oh my. I don't know that I've seen a stranger year since the year I first had a hit record. Even that. Gretchen and I actually got to be buddies when she called me one day during the worst of the Sarah Palin issue. And she said, "I don't know anybody else who's gotten a lot of hate mail from strangers. Can we have lunch?"
I said, all right, all right. In my dotage, I didn't quite expect to be mentoring people on that issue, but you take what you can get. I had my first hit record when I was 15 years old, which to me now, as a 58-year-old, is pretty extraordinary. But then, of course, being 15, I just thought that it was of no moment whatsoever. I was just cool. I can never get my hair to do that thing. And I always wanted to, you know, there's... Gretchen can do that. She also wears high heels. I really didn't appreciate that today. I wrote this song about a black boy dating a white girl, and it was not a huge issue to me because it was the 60s. It was the civil rights movement. It was the height of the civil rights movement. It was Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney. I had older friends who were down in Mississippi doing voter registration. And so it seemed to me, as a budding folk singer, that I should write about what I knew about, what was going on in my life. I never understood the power of a song. You know, my dad did. My father took one listen to the record and he said, you're going to be in trouble. And I just kind of passed it off as, yeah, you're my dad. Of course you're worried. And the record came out, everybody got mad all at once. Radio station in Atlanta got burned to the ground for playing it. Woman from the Boston Globe got fired for quoting it. And I learned to just kind of walk the gauntlet at every show. I'd be walking on stage, somebody who'd bought a ticket would stick a leg out to trip me. I'd be walking down the street, perfectly ordinary day, somebody would walk up, ask if I was Janice Ian, and spit on me. It was an amazing education, though, because you take for granted words. And you take for granted the freedom of the airwaves, and this was FM radio. It just begun. We take it for granted now that we can hear what we want to hear. But boy, let me tell you, in the 60s, when there were 7 television stations in the entire country, to put out something that upset people was huge. And for me, I really learned why Plato in the Republic gets rid of the artists first. Come to my door, baby. Your face is clean and shining black as night. My mama went to answer, you know, that you looked so fine. Now I could understand the tears and the shame. She called you boy instead of your name. When she wouldn't let you inside, when she turned and said, but honey, he's not our kind. She said, I can't see you anymore, baby. I can't see you. Walk me down to school, baby. Everybody's acting nothing right. Until they turn and say, why don't you just stick to your own kind? My teachers all laugh, their smirking stares, cutting deep down in our affairs. Preachers of one of these days I'm gonna stop my listening. I'm gonna raise my head up high. One of these days I'm gonna raise up my glistening wings and fly. But that day will have to wait for a while.
do the same thing. Gretchen didn't apologize for needing to tune so much tonight, but guitars just hate this weather. I myself woke up the other day in Kent, Ohio, looked at the temperature and thought that the U.S. had gone on Celsius while I wasn't looking. So I like to say that I started writing songs at 12, I was published at 13, I made a record at 14, had a hit at 15, was a has-been at 16, and it's uphill since then. But because of that early start, I really missed what most adolescents go through with the crushes and the rejection and the first kiss and all of that. So the first time that I fell in love, I was 21. And it was huge. I mean, I thought this was forever. I had no idea relationships could end. And so, of course, when I got dumped at 25 by my first love, my heart was broken. And I mooned around the house for a couple of weeks, crying my eyes out, sure there would be no future. And then I began to bore even myself, which is quite extraordinary given how self-obsessed I am. And I wrote a song about it. And I sent it off to my publisher, and he called a week later and he said, "Wow, that song sounds like it's from real life. How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, my heart's broke." And he said, "Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm sending your song out to a couple of jazz singers." And I said, "Well, all right." So a month goes by, he calls and he says, "Hey, Mel Torme wants to cut your song. How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, my heart's broke, but I feel a little bit better." Another month goes by, Mel Torme calls me. He says, "This song sounds so true. I'd like to do it as a duet with you. How are you doing?" I said, "Mr. Torme, my heart was broke, but I feel better." We cut the song. He's amazing. It goes on to chart on Downbeat and all of these jazz things. 6 months go by, the Grammy Awards people call me. They say, "Wow, you know, that song that sounds like it came from the heart that you sang with Mr. Torme is up for a Grammy Award. Best Jazz Vocal Duet. How are you doing?" Not 2 weeks later, who should I run into but my ex? Right there in New York City, 57th Street and 6th Avenue. Son of a bitch. There we are. My ex proceeds to say everything you hope your ex will say to you. "I cannot believe I left you. It was the stupidest thing I've ever done. I know you wouldn't take me back. I understand. I heard you took it hard. Is there anything you want to say to me? Anything, anything that you can say to me that'll make you feel just a little bit better?" I thought about it, and all I could think to say was, "Thank you so much." But there's something there, it doesn't show, but when you're near, the silly habits mean a lot. I've been alone now for quite some time, it's true. But every night when I come home, I'm still coming home to you. I listen for your footsteps. Sometimes I'll even knock. Silly habits mean a lot. I've been parading and I've led a lot astray. Why bother waiting when you can have it all today? Yeah. some may remember, like my coffee hot. Silly habits mean a lot. So you go your way, baby, I'll go mine. Honey, maybe one day our paths will entwine. I used to say I love you, but one day I forgot. Silly habits mean a lot. Silly habits mean a taken disappears with the tide. You're torn up and shaken with changing your mind. You haven't got the grace to see you finally decide, and you haven't got the strength to stay to fight. There's people who surround you only want to see you weak enough to crawl. They lie for you, they decide for you, buy up all your rights and all your wrongs. And they'll try and stop your singing in the middle of your song. They do not want you free. They will not make you strong, but only drag you down in the hole they're coming from. Well, they see you are foolish for wanting the sun. They call you selfish for learning to run. They'll tell you that the darkness is a blessing in disguise. You never have to notice if you sight it or you're blind. They'll do their best to keep you from the light. Well, look at that piano with lust, because I used to play piano and I injured my left hand about 20 years ago and can't play it anymore. I know, but it's made me such a better guitarist. It's just amazing, because I can't stretch anymore with it, but I can do this really fast. Anyway, I wrote this on piano. The days are okay. I watch the TV in the afternoons. If I get lonely, the sound of other voices, other rooms are near to me. I'm not afraid. The operator, she tells the time it's good for a laugh. There's always radio, and for a dime I can talk to God, dial a prayer. Are you there? Do you care? Are you there? And in the winter, extra blankets for the cold, fix the heater. Getting old, I am wiser now, you know. Still as big a fool concerning you. I met your friend. She's very nice, what can I say? It was an accident. I never dreamed we'd meet again this way. You're looking well. I'm not afraid. You have a lovely home, just like a picture. No, I live alone. I found it easier. You must remember how I never liked that party life when we were up all night. She's a lovely wife. You have a lovely wife. And in the winter, extra blankets for the cold. Fix the heater, getting old. You are with her now, I know. I'll live alone forever, not together now. Well, those of you who were at my show last year know that it's all done on tape anyway. No, you were here. Last year was the year I released my fabulous autobiography, which is, as autobiographies should be, all about me. Can I have a little more of myself in the monitors, please? Because as a chick singer in particular, but as any artist knows, really in our world, more of us is always a good thing. And in my world in particular, more me is always excellent choice. My partner said to me once a few months ago that she could not believe no one had killed me yet. And for some reason, everyone I work with thought that was funny. First person to ask me to write my autobiography asked when I was 15. I, of course, was willing, but my manager talked me out of it. Then came a time I hit my 50s, you know, and I thought maybe I actually had something to say. What, I wasn't quite sure, but whatever it was, perhaps I could get paid for saying it. I love that about myself. So I announced to my partner that I was going to write my autobiography, and she said, "Who will it be about?" I mentioned she's an attorney. So I really did, because I had the last person I had turned down had been an agent from the William Morris Agency, which is a very big, very important agency. And he pursued me for a year. And I finally said, "I don't have time to write it." And he said, "Who said you would have to write it? You don't have to write it. We'll find somebody to write it. All you have to do is edit." And I finally said, "No, that's it. End of discussion, no." And he was so angry that he was shaking. And he looked at me, and he put his hand out like this, and he said, "Look, girlie, lesbians won't be hot forever." And I thought, now there's a reason to write a book. I would like to be remembered for that. Thank you very much. Yes, never mind the songs. She was gay. Okay. Anyway, I went out and I found an agent who found a publisher who gave me some money, and I announced that on January 2nd I was going to begin writing my autobiography. And so, in preparation, I began reading other people's autobiographies and discovered, to my embarrassment, that I was just totally not interested in anyone else's life. I know, it's a little embarrassing, but you understand, of course, because you're here because of me, so... We both love me. I love that about you. Where was I? I digress. Oh, yes, my autobiography. So, I would get up in the morning, because I was really paranoid about screwing something up, like, was I actually with Jimi Hendrix on that night, or was he in Paris? And the thing that terrified me was that the book would come out and people would poke holes through it. So I did a lot of research on myself. I would wake up in the morning and I would Google Janice Ian. For a while there, I was in competition with a couple of writer friends as to who had the most Google pages. It became a little embarrassing when my eBay worth dropped. And then I sat down to write the book. And discovered to my horror that my life had really been tragically boring compared to the kind of books I like to read. Because far from being an intellectual myself, although appearances to the contrary, why is that funny? I finished high school, I got a GED. Far from being an intellectual, I tend towards science fiction and romance and mystery. Right now, I'm deep into Lee Child and the Reacher mysteries, and before that I was reading a great deal of Tara Taylor Quinn and Judy Chance, and before that I had a Stephen King festival. I know, and Grisham, I mean, these are people, you've got to do something right if you're selling millions of books. I don't sell millions of books, so I figure, why not read? So the one thing that I discovered all these books had in common was dirt. And I realized that what I'm interested in someone else's life is not their intellectual prowess or what they like to read or why they wrote a song. I want dirt. I want to know who they slept with. I want to know who they slept with and when they slept with them and why they slept with them, whether it was good to sleep with them, why they stopped sleeping with them in the first place, and if given the chance, would they indeed sleep with them again? So Pat comes home from work one day, and I'm sitting in front of the computer in tears. And she says, "What's wrong?" And I say, "I can't write this book." And she says, "What do you mean you can't write this book? You took money." And I said, "It's going to suck." And she said, "How?" And I said, "Because my life is boring." And she said, "Okay, how is it your life is boring? Certainly you find a great deal of interest in it." And I said, "Because I've never slept with anybody famous or interesting." Such an unfortunate choice of words. So we thought for a minute, and she said, "You took money." And I said, "I know." And she said, "You spent it." And I said, "I know." She said, "You'll have to give it back." And I said, "I will." And she said, "You can't." And I said, well, what am I going to do? And she said, let me make sure I understand. You are not going to write this book because you never slept with anyone famous. And I said, yes. And she said, Janice, just lie. I know you and I'll agree. What this world needs is a lot more me. Well, I have found the remedy. Gonna write my autobiography. I've led a fascinating life. I had a husband and a wife. But you will truly be amazed at just how humble I have stayed. Enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think of me? You must feel such gratitude that you will get to read my autobiography. My life didn't have a very big plot. Guess I'll have to lie a lot. It should be easy to make things up. There's no one left to call my bluff. A lot of my old friends have passed on. The rest did drugs and their memory is gone. So I'll write my own history in my autobiography. I say I slept with a Kennedy, I don't remember which one. They all looked the same to me, or they did when we got done. Maybe they'll film it for TV. I wonder who they'll cast as me. It should be somebody I look like. Sigourney Weaver would be alright. It's gonna be hard to deal with fame once this whole world knows my name. But I'll stay humble and grateful to all the little people like you. A 1,000 pages more of me and all I've seen and done. It will be my legacy, and that's just volume one of my autobiography. You probably noticed, if you were getting popcorn or anything, that Gretchen and I are selling everything we could possibly fit in our vans. More of us. Gretchen actually has a wonderful Christmas record that I liked so much that I sent it out as Christmas presents to everyone last year. And I, of course, have, well, more of me. Yeah. I have a DVD, actually, that's been on PBS. I could not believe that PBS had me on. As nervous as I made them, they actually went ahead and showed it. And I encourage people to go ahead and buy my CDs and then make copies for your friends. That's my personal thing. And that's partly because I have done so many since I was 15. It's hard to keep track. And so I figure you're better off just copying them and giving them away than buying them. Although I will say that my website sale is going on right now. And of course, that is part of how I make my living. Actually, it's not. Which is really horrible some days. See, my mom, you may have noticed that there are fabulous bags out there that we're putting the merchandise in that say the Pearl Foundation on them, and they have a little discussion of what the Pearl Foundation is. It's named after my mother, who had multiple sclerosis. And when she was finally diagnosed, we became desperate to find something that would help her continue. And my mother came from that generation of women who didn't go to college, and she had put her brother through, and she had put her husband through, my dad. But she didn't get to go, and because of that, she always felt a little bit stupid. And so we found a school in Vermont, Goddard, where she didn't have to be on campus much. And over 14 years, she got a BA and then a master's, and it kept her alive as we watched her slow decline. When she died, I wanted to honor her memory in some way, and so we held the first ever internet auction, pre-eBay, and we raised $73,000 for a college scholarship. And so what happens now is, at the end of each year, I add up what the merchandise cost and what the postage cost and a couple of other things, not very much, and we donate the rest to the foundation. And I'm very pleased to say that in this year alone, I got to write two $60,000 checks to Berea College in Kentucky and another $60,000 check to Warren Wilson College in North Carolina, which, if you think about it, and a small career that has not had a hit record in forever, is quite extraordinary. And the website, thank you. Which is all actually just a pitch for my website, because the website sale is our big fundraiser of the year, and I knock the CDs down to $5 a piece for a lot of them, and we don't raise postage like most places that have sales, and all the profit goes to the Pearl Foundation, because in part it's great to give something back. And what I find in these strange times, my friend Vince Gill has a wonderful song called Strange Days, because that's all he could come up with, was these are just strange days. In these times, people feel bad that they can't give a lot. And we're all so happy if we can just give a little. So we have a tip jar. And what I say is, if you've got spare change in your pocket, throw it in there. At the end of the year, I expect that tip jar will raise about $6,000. Okay, that's my pitch for the night. Let's tell you about my mom, because this next song was written at the request of Woody Guthrie's children, Arlo and Nora. They sent me a fragment of a lyric, and I took one look at it and knew that it was mine. When I was writing the book, the hardest part was the remembering. I'm remembering the losses. Because nobody tells you that one day you're going to look up and find that you are an orphan. Nobody warns you that you'll be in the supermarket looking at people and thinking, I wonder if you have parents. I don't have parents. Nobody tells you that there'll come a moment when you are well and truly on your own. No one to answer to, and yet no one to fall back on either. And I found myself writing in the book that my mother had been dying for so long that it seemed to me the world was comprised of marks on a yardstick. Here was a mark for the tingling and the numbness. Here was a mark for the diagnosis. Here was the mark where she descended into a wheelchair. I marked her last steps. I marked our last meal. And I marked the day that I finally learned to stop insisting she be what she'd been and instead began to love what she'd become. I don't know to this day which is better, a slow slide or a sudden onslaught. But in the early days, when my mother could still speak, I promised her that I wouldn't let her suffer, with no idea of what that might mean. And so when the hospice worker called to say she was dying, and I rushed up to New York City and stood at her bedside with my brother, I told her, if I don't take you to the hospital, you will die. And she, who hadn't spoken in months, looked at me and said, yes. And I burst into tears and ran from the room and sat there crying with the nurse. And when I recovered, I said, I swore not to let her suffer, so what do I do? How do I make this gentle? And that night, when my mother fell asleep, we tucked her in and we kissed her. And I turned the oxygen all the way up. And when she woke in the morning, there was color in her skin. There were roses in her cheeks. And she sat up, and she asked for a Bailey's. And all day long, my brother and I brought her Bailey's laced with ice cream because she could taste that. And all day long, she made us listen to the opera even though she knew we hated it. And all day long, we laughed. My brother and I told stories of ourselves in our childhoods, things we were sure she hadn't known about. We had a remembrance feast. And we had the best day we had had in years. And when night fell, I tucked her in and we kissed her goodnight. And I turned the oxygen all the way off. I always thought death would be dramatic. Astonishing, frightening. I never knew it was at once so natural and so profound. And we found ourselves sitting and watching as the breaths came slower and slower, and the space between grew longer and longer until she was gone. In my grandmother's little village, the ladies would have come to tell us what to do. And instead, I was humiliated because I handed her over to a stranger. And all day long, I thought about that, the wrongness of that, that I was so removed. And when I slept in her apartment that night, I lay my head down on her pillow, and I inhaled her scent. And it was so familiar. It was so much my childhood. And I fell asleep. And I dreamed a dream so marvelous, I could not have written it myself. In my dream, my mother was standing at the edge of a huge field of wildflowers, of every shape and description. And she raised her arm that could not move. And she shouted with lips that couldn't move. And she called my name, and she came racing toward me across this field. And as she ran, the wildflowers reached up and wrapped themselves around her and left their perfume on her skin. And when she reached me, she hugged me like she had not been able to hug me in years. And I fell into her arms, and I lay my head against her breast, and I inhaled her scent. And I was home again. And I was safe again. At last. If I could only hear my mother sing again. If I could close my eyes and hear your voice as then. All the friends and family would sing along with me and set your spirit free. In my heart I hear you sing again, and every note's as natural as then. When I sing my songs for family and friends, in my heart I hear your voice again. I know the troubled times that turned your hair to gray, and all the tears and sorrows follow to your grave. But deep within the heart of hunger, there were always melodies that passed from you to me. In my heart I hear you sing again, and every note's as natural as then.
when I sing those songs with family and friends. In my heart, I hear your voice again. In my heart, I hear you sing again.
Can I buy you a drink? Yeah. Glenn Fittich, thank you. That's almost worth bending down that far. Are you and Pat still married? Yes. 20 years now, this month. Go figure. Janice Stems is having a birthday. Hey, congratulations. Look. Every day you're vertical and breathing on your own is a victory. Mazel tov, Janice. I can't believe somebody has that nerve. Janice Dems, happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Janice. It's me. Happy birthday to you. That's sweet. Took a lot of nerve to leave that. Please sing that song I like, the one with the guitar on it. Why not? Hey. I have a clock up here that's supposed to be working, but it's saying 3:20. And I know I have not been on stage that long. Some people have been complaining of late that I only do my own material. So I thought I would work up some other people's songs tonight. This is actually an English song that I really am fond of.
This happens to me every time here. This doesn't happen to Over the Rhine, I'm sure. Probably doesn't happen to Melanie either.
I don't mind pictures either, and that does happen to be my good side, actually. Love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please, love me do. Yeah, love me do. Love, love me do. You know.
Love me, do. Yeah, love me, do. Someone to love, somebody new. Someone like you. Love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So
you know, this is the second to last show of the year, and for me anyway, and I believe for Gretchen and Barry as well. And so there's a certain giddiness that takes hold. you suddenly realize that whatever press you were going to get, you've gotten. And you're done with it now. And so it's only us who's going to know what goes wrong tonight. Therefore, you can take chances that you would not normally take. Sometimes for better and sometimes for worse. I've gotten to the point where I have a legacy. Yes, thank you very much. Believe me, I'd rather be 25. I always thought when I was in my 20s that there was like a famous people's club. And if you could just belong to that famous people's club, you would sit around with other artists and you would discuss deep thoughts. So I found myself a couple of months ago opening for Joan Baez, who I absolutely adore. And we're sitting backstage. And I don't know how we got on it, but I said, and you know this weird thing happens now when I pull my skin. And she said, I know, in my neck. And I said, what is this with the eyes, too, you know? What is going on with us? And she said, I don't know, I'm not looking. She's very wise. Yeah, it's fortunate. It's fortunate to have any kind of a career at all in my industry, which is really the business of failure more than success. I feel very fortunate to have a career. But at times it does seem like quite a bit, even to me. And so I was standing there, and I was on stage opening for Joan, and I was singing. And I looked over, and it was one of the most amazing, wonderful moments of my life. There was Joan sitting on the side of the stage where nobody could see her. And she had her head bowed, and her hands were in her lap. And she was singing along with me. And I thought, oh my God, look at that. Joan Baez knows my song. And then I thought, Joan Baez recorded that song. I hear your voice in every corridor. I see your face in every picture frame. I feel your eyes in every starry sky. Lover, am I coming home again? Now am I humble, who once was proud. Now am I silent, who once was loud. Now am I waiting for the sound of your saying, lover, am I coming home again? When you're gone, the sun don't shine. Light a light, light a light for me, and bring me back home again. And how we loved till the years were days. How we laughed all our tears away. Now the time begins to fade. Lover, am I coming home again? There's a wisdom in the teachings of the old familiar songs, and a sorrow in believing all the old familiar wrongs, and a lesson to be learned, though I've known all day long. Lover, am I coming home again? Light a light, light a light for me. Light a light, light a light for me. Light a light, light a light for me. Bring me back home again. Bring me back home again. Train anymore. I'll go to bed at 9 and awaken with the dawn, and lunch at 12:30, and dinner prompt at 5. The comfort of a few old friends long past their prime. Pass the tea and sympathy for the good old days long gone. Let's drink a toast to those who most believe in what they've won. It's a long, long time till morning,
he's wasted on the dawn. I'll not write another line, for my true love is gone. And when the guests have done, I'll tidy up the room, I'll turn the covers down, and gazing at the moon, I'll pray to go quite mad, living long ago, when you and I were one so very long ago. So pass the tea in sympathy for the good old days long gone. Let's drink a toast to those who most believe in what they've won. It's a long, long time till morning. Please waste it on the dawn. I'll not write another line, for my true love is gone. And when I have no dreams to give you anymore, I'll light a blazing fire and wait within the door and throw my life away. I wonder why they all will say. And now I lay me down to sleep forever and a day. Pass the tea in sympathy, for the good old days are dead. Let's drink a toast to those who best survived the life they led. It's a long, long time till morning, so build your fires high. Now I lay me down to sleep forever by your side.
At home with Pat one day, and we were IMing each other as you do at home, and I saw on the CNN news crawl that we could get married, so I IMed her and I said, well, I have to go to a science fiction convention in Toronto, would you like to go there and get married? And she IMed back and said, oh, a science fiction convention, how appropriate. People think I make these things up. So we went shopping for bridal clothes. The local Macy's. The lady who was assigned as our personal shopper, once they found out what we were looking for, said, and which of you is the lucky lady? We settled for Hawaiian shirts and got the hell out of there. So we go up to Toronto, and I don't mind telling you, since we're now so intimate, that I find the whole concept of marrying another girl a little weird. All right, it's not politically correct, but I find it. I was not raised with that. Plus, what do you call each other? Heterosexuals never have to think about this. You have a plethora of names. But what do we do? I mean, I'm not going to call her my husband. She said, you are not calling me your wife. We settled on spouse. Just let that word roll around in your head. Spouse. Spouse. Sounds like something you eat on ciabatta bread. Spouse with arugula, doesn't it? All right, fine. So we find ourselves in Canada at a very nice hotel. And the lady behind the desk says, "Oh, are you here for the science fiction convention?" And Pat says, "No, we're marrying each other." And the woman says, "Oh, let me give you the bridal suite." We go out the next morning for our coffee. We order two lattes. The kid behind the counter says, "Are you in town for the convention?" And I go, "No, we're getting married to each other." And he says, "Oh, I'll buy your drinks." All week long, people treated us like we were absolutely normal. It was the weirdest feeling. And you know, we really were awkward. I mean, here's two women in their 50s, right? We've already been together 15 years. It's just a piece of paper. That's what we keep telling ourselves in our nervousness and our awkwardness. It's just a piece of paper. It doesn't mean that much. It's just, we ought to do this. But it's just a piece of paper. So imagine our surprise when the minister pronounced us married. And we both burst into tears. And we wept all the way down the courthouse steps. And we wept all the way back to the hotel, all the way up the elevator to our room. And it took us the rest of the day to understand that it was just a piece of paper, yes, but for the first time in our lives together, we felt like we had the weight of a nation behind us saying that we were normal. And it felt at once so profoundly gratifying and so satisfying and yet so freighted with responsibility and so awesomely, exhilaratingly frightening. And then we came home. We're married in London, but not in New York. Spain says we're kosher. The States say we're pork. We wed in Toronto, a judge said amen. And when we got home, we were single again. It's hard being married and living in sin. Sometimes I forget just which state I am in. Thank God I'm not Catholic. I'd be a mess trying to figure out what to confess. There's some Catholics over here. My passport in Sweden says I've got a wife. Amsterdam tells me I'm partnered for life. But back in America, land of the free, I'm a threat to the national security. If I were a frog, if I were a frog, here is what I would say. It's hard being green. It's hard being gay, but love has no color, and hearts have no sex. So love where you can, and fuck all the rest. Thank you so much. Thank you. Frogs everywhere. Thank you. I love that because everybody's waiting for the big serious moment. Yes. That's not on my last album. I think you can still, can you, does anybody remember, can you still download it for free from my site? It's okay. If you go to, named after me, JaniceIan.com. You can actually download it for free, or you can go to iTunes and pay for it. Either way, it doesn't matter to me. When I originally wrote it, I was in England, and I wrote Bugger the Rest, which in England means something, but in America, they just kind of go, what? Plus, I always wanted to say the F word on stage. So. There's not many goals left, you know? You have to take what you can get. We do have a pretty full house tonight, which is extraordinary in these times, and I do thank you for that, because it's rough out there, and somebody said to me the other day, how do you know it's rough? You don't have a day job. And I said, you're right. I don't have a day job. I don't know what it is to lose a pension, because I don't have a pension. I don't know what it is to lose health insurance, because I don't get health insurance. But I cross the country in a van. I know exactly what the price of gas is every day. And it hits us just as hard as it hits everybody else. It's just different, you know? Well, that was serious enough. Back to me. I thank you for making Gretchen and Barry so welcome. I Norman, thank you. Good. I will tell you that I normally like working alone. And yet, someone, a friend of mine, said to me last year, you know what, if you always work alone, when is anybody going to get the breaks you got? And I thought, that's pretty true. I mean, I've opened for, golly, Lagos and Messina and Billy Joel and Elton John, and you name it. So I think it's pretty cool. And I love that I can say to other performers, don't worry, my audience will actually listen. Because you get so used to, when you're the opening act, people just talking or having dinner or throwing things at you. I've had Coke bottles. There was a point in my life when I was opening for America, and got to be a contest between me and the drummer who got to hide behind the bass drum when the bottles started flying. I thought I should have dibs. I was paying him. Now, one of the joys of working with another artist is that if you love their work, you get to hear their work, and that's certainly a wonderful thing for me. Because it's hard being an artist. It's not hard being famous. Don't let anybody bullshit you about that. It's not hard at all being famous. You can walk away from that, and in about 2 years, nobody will remember you. I have done it twice. I can attest to that. And I don't believe it's hard being rich. I would like to find out, because I just can't credit it. But it's hard being an artist, because if you are any kind of decent artist at all, you feel the weight of the people who went before you. You feel the weight of the shoulders that you're standing on and the bones you stand on. And every time you sit down to write, you resolve not to think about those people or those bones, because if you do, you will surely stop writing. Because the bar is just too high. Gretchen and I, and Vince Gill and Vienna Tang, were sitting around at breakfast one day, quite accidentally, and we all agreed that we would never be Leonard Cohen. And it was at once funny and yet heart-wrenching, because you could see in all of our eyes how badly we wanted to hit that mark, and how often we knew that we hadn't. And you hit a point as an artist where you go, you know what, that's okay. I do what I do. I do it better than anyone else could do it, and that's fine. But once in a while, you hit the mark. Once in a while in your life as an artist, you actually get to create something where you go, that is one of the best things ever. And I got to do that. And as the years roll past, you look back on it and you forget how you wrote it. You forget why you wrote it. You just remember that feeling of triumph. And it only lasted till you started your next song, because now you'd set your own bar so high. But for that one shining moment when you first sang that piece to yourself, you could think to yourself, you know what? Today, I hit the universal greatness. I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty queens and high school girls with clear skin smiles. We married young and then retired. The Valentines I never knew, the Friday night charades of youth were spent on one more beautiful. At 17 I learned the truth. And those of us with ravaged faces, lacking in the social graces, desperately remained at home, inventing lovers on the phone, who called to say, come dance with me, murmured vague obscenities. It isn't all it seems at 17. A brown-eyed girl in hand-me-downs, whose name I never could pronounce, said, pity please the ones who serve, 'cause they only get what they deserve. In the rich relation, hometown queen marries into what she needs with a guarantee of company and haven for the elderly. So remember those who win the game and lose the love they sought to gain. In debentures of quality and dubious integrity, their small town eyes will gape at you in dull surprise when payment due exceeds accounts received at 17. Those of us who knew the pain of Valentines that never came, and those whose names were never called when choosing sides for basketball. It was long ago and far away. The world was younger than today, when dreams were all they gave for free to ugly duckling girls like me. We all play the game, and when we dare, we cheat ourselves at solitaire, inventing lovers on the phone, repenting other lives unknown. Call and say, come on, dance with me, and murmur vague obscenities at ugly girls like me at 17. Thank you so much. Barry Walsh.
Is she badass or what? Everybody knows, you know, Janis is a legendary and wonderful singer and songwriter, but I don't think enough people realize what a fabulous guitar player she is. Truly.
What key are we in?
We're in a
key of art.
And I'm really sorry about the heels. I forgot.
Yeah, right.
This all came up because one day somebody said to me, well, what does Gretchen Peters look like? And I said, you know, she's this tall blonde. Like I said, you take what you can get. Gretchen is actually doing this song at my request because this is my favorite Gretchen Peters song. And then afterwards, we actually rehearsed this afternoon a couple of sing-along songs. I know. Are you excited?
That was like mixed like anticipation.
Folk music? No, it's folk. No. They're just nervous about what songs they are. They've seen my show. All right. Let me see where I am here.
Yes, I would like more of me, please, because I'm playing for her. Yes.
Sam looks up from his Sunday paper. He says, boys, you're on the wrong track. The secret of life is there ain't no secret, and you don't get your money back. The secret of life is getting up early. The secret of life is staying up late. The secret of life is trying not to hurt. Don't wait. The secret of life is a good cup of coffee. The secret of life is keep your eye on the ball. The secret of life is to find the right woman. The secret of life is nothing at all. It's nothing at all. Guys, just
says, you know, I've been thinking. The other one says that won't get you too
So we had originally rehearsed Kumbaya, but I'm going to change it. Disappointing as I know that will be. Have you guys, does anybody here have an iPhone? Oh, two people. This is a folk crowd. Used to be you could be at a concert, you could wave your lighters, you know, back when we all smoked. The joy has gone out of that. Now people hold their phones, but it's not quite, yeah, thank you. It's not quite the same thing, although I must say if you can get 40 or 50 of them together, it's pretty cool. But the new iPhone has an application on it, which is a Zippo lighter. And you can actually press a button and it'll go just like a Zippo. Okay, that's enough, thank you. So what we'd like to ask is that all of you join us on the choruses of this song and the verses, if you remember them. And if you are moved, as we are always moved when we do this, which we've done once before, if you are moved by it, please feel free to just go ahead and wave your lighters. Barry needs more me. I love that about him.
Can't get enough of you, Janice.
Can't get enough of your love. Trying to have a moment here. They say we're young and we don't know. Won't find out until we grow.
Well, I don't know if all that's true.
Straight face.
But you got me, and baby, I got you. Babe. I got you, babe. I got you, babe.
No, no, not yet. They say our love won't pay the rent, for we do, our money's always spent.
Take it, Gretchen.
I know we don't have a pot, but the pot, at least I'm sure of all the things we've got. Babe. I got you, babe. I got you, babe.
Now the bridge.
I've got flowers in the spring. I've got you to wear my ring. And when I'm sad, you're a clown. When I'm mad, you're a rat. So here we are in Michigan now.
At the Ark.
At the Ark. Here we are at the Ark.
In the dark.
It's better than standing in the dark. That's terrible. I liked it better when we were Illyria and we could rhyme it with diphtheria. I'd love to stay and play for you. So here we are, back at the Ark.
Chark.
Dark.
Lark. And we are missing Lark. Patty Larkin. Babe. I got you, babe. I got you, babe. For me, something you call love, but confess, you've been messing where you shouldn't have been messing. Yeah, now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing. You keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha. Well, I just found me a brand new box of matches.
Yeah.
But he knows you ain't had time to learn. Well, these boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
I was actually going to do Stars, but nobody's called it out.
I think that's a better call, actually.
Well, since... sing that song that the guitar part is on.
I would take a Glenlivet when I come out there to sign things. Or Glenfiddich, whatever.
I do honestly thank you. I've said before in my life when I lecture that the audience is the beast. And it's true. If they turn on you, it's quite a frightening thing, but by God, when it's a good audience on a good night, you can't beat it. And I thank you for that. Jesse, come home. There's a hole in the bed where we slept. Now it's growing cold. Hey, Jesse, our face in the place where we lay by the hearth, all apart. It hangs on the heart, and I'm leaving light on the stairs. No, I am not scared, 'cause I wait for you. Hey, Jesse, lonely, come home. Jesse, the floors and the boards recalling your steps. And I remember too, the pictures are fading and they're shaded in gray, but I still set a place on the table at noon, and I'm leaving a light on the stairs. No, I'm not scared, I wait for you. Hey, Jesse, I'm lonely, come home. Jesse, the spread on the bed, it's like when you left, 'cause I have kept it up for you, and all the blues and the greens have been recently cleaned, and they're seemingly new. Hey, Jess, me and you, we'll swallow the light on the stairs. We'll do up my hair with sleep unaware. Hey, Jesse,
lonely. Come home. Thank you.